All right, Rabbosai, good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Kuf Gimel. We have a lot to do today. So let's begin. So actually, let's pick up. If you don't mind, let's go back for just a moment, very quickly, to Kuf Beis Amud Beis, right by the Gemara. Even though we got a few lines into Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph, just really quickly. So remember again, the Mishnah was speaking about the idea. The Mishnah was speaking about the idea of if I go ahead and I sell to my friend a Beis Kur Afar, a Kur of land, right? A Kur of land. So ultimately, again, the Mishnah said, if I sell him a Kur of land, if there are rocks that are more than 10 tefachim high, or clefts in the ground that are more than 10 tefachim deep, they are not included in the sale. So the Gemara brought up the case of one who's makdish his land. So remember again, let's just read it because it'll take less time to read it than say it outside. Tanan Hasam, right by the Gemara Kuf Beis Amud Beis. Tanan Hasam makdish sadeo b'shas ha-yovel. If one goes ahead and is makdish, consecrates his field during the yovel cycle, no sin will base zerach omer asorim chamishim shekel kasef. We'll say again, remember, the halacha is for what we call steachuza, ancestral land. So the halacha is that ancestral land is given an objective valuation of 50 shekel per core of land. In other words, that it's worth 50 shekel. It's worth 50 shekel for the 50-year duration. So if you want to redeem it, depending how many years you are into the Yovel cycle will determine ultimately again how much you have to pay for redemption. So Hayusham the Kaimamukim Yutvachim, Oslam Gavam Yutvachim, Tap of Kogimel, Ein Nimdadin Ima, Pachos Mikan Nimdadin Ima. So we'll say again, remember we said that however, if when you sanctified that field, you were Makdish that Steachuza, what we call an ancestral field, if there were rocks that are more than 10 Tvachim high, or clefts that are more than 10 Tvachim deep, they are not included. In the steachuz, and I will say, I just want to point out that Rashbam points out over here, when we say they're not included in the steachuzah, they are hekdish. But rather, again, they're not treated like steachuzah hekdish. What does that mean? So we'll say, steachuzah hekdish, when a person is makdish, their ancestral land, so that is unique in that, again, you have this specific type of valuation for redemption. Every core is given an objective value of 50 shekel. Otherwise, when you normally makdish land, if you want to be makdish land, they will say, then again, how do we gauge redemption value? By the actual value of the land. So when the Braisa says over here that if you're makdish a steachuza and you have rocks or you have clefts that are 10 tefachim high or 10 tefachim deep, that they are not included in the hektish of the steachuzah. We'll say that just means they're hektish, but not hektish like steachuzah. So if you'd want to redeem them, you'd have to redeem them with actual value. So ask the Gemara, va'amai. But I don't understand why that is. Lekadshu ba'anpei nafshayhu. Why wouldn't, if so, we'll say, if I'm being maktish my steachuzah, and what happens? I go ahead and have clefts or have rocks that are on that field that are more than 10 tefachim high or 10 tefachim deep. So I understand why they might be reckoned separately than the actual steachuzah field, but then let them become hektish as their own steachuzah. In other words, let them become hektish on their own in the same manner that the rest of the field is. Even if they're going to be reckoned separately from the field, they should be hektish like a steachuzah. V'chitema, kevan de la havi beiskar, lo kachi. So maybe you'll say it has to do with the fact that it's not a base card. In other words, maybe you're going to taina that the only land that becomes hektish, like a steachuza bosa, is what? Is a base core of land. You need a minimum of a base core of land. That's not true. V'hatanya, we learn sada, when the pasuk says sada, not tabalam rabosa. What does that teach us? Lifi shene'emar zera chomer so'orim b'chamishim shekel kasef. Because the pasuk says that they will say, if you're makdish, ultimately a field that will produce a zerach omer sorim, which is the size, which represents the field, the size of a core. That field is redeemed for 50 shekel kesef, 50 silver pieces. Ainli ella shehikdish bichamishim shekel, excuse me. Ainli ella, I'm sorry. Ainli ella shehikdish binyan azeh. I only know that the laws of steachuzah apply when you're makdish a field that is the size of a core. However, minayin lerabos lesech vechatzi lesech sa'ah tarkov vechatzi tarkov. But say, how do I know that the laws of steachuzah could apply to a field of any size? Talmud Lomar, Soda Mikol Makom. Therefore, I will say the pasuk says Soda. In other words, the word Soda teaches me that the laws of Steachuza, the laws of consecrating an ancestral field, apply to a field of any size. So we'll say if that's the case, then again, even if I'm Makdish, my Steachuza, my ancestral field, and there are rocks or there are clefts that are more than 10 Tvachim high, more than 10 Tvachim deep, why can't those areas also become consecrated as a Steachuza? To which the Gemara says, Amar Rav Okva Bar Chama, Hacha B'nikoim Meleim Mayim Askinon, Delav B'nei Zirioninu. So we'll say, Rav Okva Bar Chama says, I'll tell you what the case is. The case of Yabosa is where the clefts are filled with water, and therefore, again, cannot be planted. Now, we'll say, now take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. It's in the intermediate wide lines, about four lines in. Delav ben Ezrianinhu, velo karinon luhu base zera. Hilchach ein nimdodin ima, ela bifne atzman liftos b'shavyehen. So I will say, ultimately again, so because these clefts are filled with water, you cannot plant them. Because you cannot plant them, I will say, the way the Torah frames the redemption of ancestral land is based on agricultural output. So the Gemara is therefore saying that lemaisa, any piece of land, specifically again, this cleft that's filled with water, which is not shayach for agriculture, therefore what? Therefore cannot become a stay achuza. Does not become recognized as part of the stay achuza. So the Gemara says, Dekanami diktani. The truth is, we could even bring a raya to this from the Braisa. What does the Braisa say? Dumya disloim. Because we'll say, ultimately, again, remember, the Braisa compares the cleft with the rock. And the same way that the rock cannot be used for planting, so too the clefts cannot be used for planting as well. Says Gemara, well, if that's the case, that what you're telling me is that when the Braisa says that if you have clefts that are more than 10 tefachim, they can't be included in the sale of the, they're not included in the hekdish, in the steachuza hekdish of the field. Why? Because apparently now we're dealing with clefts that are filled with water. So then lemais, and then because they're not capable of being planted, iachi, afilu pachos mikan nami. Right? We'll say, again, if that's the case, that this is a din in the fact that the clefts are filled with water, and therefore they're not usable. They're not usable for planting. So I will say, even if they're less than 10 tefachim deep, they also should not be included in the consecration of the field. Because I will say, if they're filled with water, they can't be used for planting. Why is there a shear for the depth in which they are not included? To which the Gemara says, no. I'll tell you why. Hano nagoi de'ara mikru. Because I will say, at the end of the day, those clefts that are less than 10 tefachim deep, both are just simply called cracks in the earth. So because they are called cracks in the earth, Rabbi said, therefore, by definition, they would be included in the Steachuza designation. Similarly, again, Shadri de'ara mikru. Rabbi said, similarly, if you have a rock that's less than 10 tefachim high, that's called Shadri de'ara, literally the spine of the ground. So the Gemara says, Hachamai. Rabbi said, so what is the halacha here? Now, look at the Rashbam for just a moment. So look at the Rashbam. It's in the wide lines, Rabbi said, third line in Hachamai. Nikayim amukim yud masnisin gaibe mechira. Diktani nami ein nimdadin ima. So we'll say, now let's go back to the Mishnah. So remember, we were focusing up until now on Hekdish, specifically again the Hekdish consecration of Steachuz of ancestral land. We'll say, now we're jumping back to our Mishnah. So the way we have set up now the Braisa when it comes to Hekdish is that if I'm Makdish my Steachuz, I'm Makdish my ancestral field, and what happens? And I have clefts in the earth that are 10 tefachim deep and filled with water, therefore not capable of being planted. Therefore, halacha lemaaseh, again, they're not included in the hekdish of the field. Now we're asking, let's jump back to our Mishnah. So what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah spoke about Abosai. The Mishnah spoke about if I go ahead and I sell a piece of property. So the Mishnah said, if I sell property and I'm selling Ruvain, a core of land, If there are clefts that are more than 10 tefachim deep, so ultimately they are not included in the sale. Now look back at the Rashbam for just a moment. So Rashbam says, when we say that if the clefts are more than 10 tefachim deep, they are not included in the sale, Binikam, I'm reading Rashbam now. Mi mari nami binikam melayin mayim, dumya disaloim, vehilchach lohava bichla base karafar, aval I havu reuyin lizria, nim dadinima, kida amran gabe hagdish, o dilma lo dami mechir lehagdish, de ain adam rot. So we'll say, here's the shayla. So now what we've established is, when do we say that a cleft that is more than 10 tefachim or more deep, when is it not included in the hektish of a stechuza? When it's filled with water. Because then it's not plantable. We're asking now, the Mishnah told me that if I sell a base core of land to Reuven, to my friend, then what happens? If there are nikoyim, if there are clefts more than 10 tefachim deep, those clefts are not included in the sale. So here's the shayla. Does that also only apply when the clefts are filled with water? Or do we say when the clefts are filled, that's why they're not included in the sale, but if they're empty, they would be included in the sale? Or maybe even if they're empty, they're not included in the sale as well. So what's halacha b'osai? Hachamai, amar Rapapa, afa pi she'ein malein mayim. Rapapa says, no, b'osai, when it comes to mekach u'memkar, when it comes to real estate sales, any cleft that is more than 10 tefachim deep, even even if it is not filled with water, is not going to be included in the sale. Why not? My taima, ein adam rotza sheyitin ma'osa b'makom echad ve'yiru lo kishnayim u'shlosh shemakamos. Because a person does not want to spend his money on a field that is going to look like two or three different fields. Now, when I buy real estate, what I want to be able to do is I want to be able to buy a piece of a contiguous property. And a property that not only is actually legally contiguous, but is visually contiguous as well. The problem is, if you have these clefts that are more than 10 tefachim deep, it has the appearance of what? That I'm dealing with different parcels of land. Therefore, halacha lemaaseh, again, when a person, Ramos, it's just a din of the way people want their property to look. I want my property to look like one contiguous parcel. Therefore, by definition, any clefts of 10 tefachim or more, deeper, right, 10 tefachim or more of depth, are not going to be included in the sale. And again, honestly, what that means is, if I'm selling Reuven a base core of land, what the Gemara is now teaching me is that if there are clefts more than 10 tefachim deep, they are not included in the calculation of the core. Or else I'll have to give him a core minus those, with not counting those clefts. So most of what comes out of here is the following. That is true even if it's not filled up with water. That is true even if it's technically a plantable area, because this is not a din in the ability to plant. This is a din in how the property looks. So a major distinction now between Hekdish and Mekach u'Memkar. Maskef l'Ravina. So Ravina said, 1 second, but we learned in the Mishnah, v'hadugya dislaim katani. We have also say, the Mishnah constantly compared the cleft that was 10 tefachim deep to the stone that was 10 tefachim high. Now, why is a stone that's 10 tefachim high not included in the sale? So the Gemara says, Maslam delav b'nei Zriya ninu, afhani nami delav b'nei Zriya ninu. I thought that the reason is because the same way that you can't plant on the stone, you also can't plant in the cleft. Which tells you, like Rabbi say, if you can plant in the cleft, i.e. like it's not filled up with water, then what? It should be included in the sale. To which the Gemara says, no, that's not what the comparison was there for. Ki katoni dumya dislaim apachos mikan. Rabbi say, ultimately, again, it's teaching me, the comparison was there to teach me, that just as stones that are less than 10 tefachim high are included in the calculation of the core of land, so to clefts that are less than 10 tefachim deep are included in the calculation of the land as well. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. It's like right in the middle of the wide lines. Apachos mikan kilor mishum seifa diktani pachos mikan nimdadin ima tanereisha nekayim uslaim delabene izvianinu lashirin dehechad apachos mikan afgav labene izvianinu nimdadin ima. So again, the Gemara is just pointing out over here that Lamaisa, the Mishnah, wanted to preserve some type of linguistic symmetry, but the real yisod, the real comparison, is in the second part of the Mishnah, that if they are less than 10 tefachim high or less than 10 tefachim deep, both are included. So Rabbi Osai, just so you understand, halacha lemaisa, the way we paskin in this case, is quite interesting. We will have two different piskei halacha for hektish, then for regular mekach u'memkar. So for regular hektish, Rabbi Osai, if I am makdish, if I consecrate my ancestral field, so what's the status of the clefts that are more than 10 tefachim deep? So Rabbi Osai, it depends. What does it depend on? If they are empty, and therefore technically plantable, then they are included in the hektish of the hekdish of the they're including the hekdish of the steachuza. If however they are filled with water and therefore not plantable, so they are not included in the hekdish of steachuza. Again, as we said before, they're still hekdish, but a different kind of hekdish. Remember, steachuza is ancestral land, is redeemed at an objective value, a biblically set value, versus regular hekdish, which is redeemed ultimately again at what we'll call market value or actual value at the time of the hekdish. When it comes to mekach u'memkar, the halacha is that if I'm selling Reuven a core of land, so anything that's more than 10 tefachim deep does not go towards the total calculation of the land. Whether it's empty or filled with water is irrelevant. Why? Because again, that is a din that a person does not want to purchase a piece of property that seems disjointed or separate. Therefore, anything that is 10 tefachim or more deep ultimately is not counted towards the base core of land. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Trashim Shamru. So we'll say, now we're going to speak a little bit about the rocks. So now what we've established is that if the rocks are less than 10 tefachim, then ultimately, again, they are including this. So when we say including this, I mean they count towards the base core of land. So the Gemara now says the following. Rav Yitzchak says, Trashim Shamru. So we'll say, these rocks that we have spoken about, base are Ba'az Kabin. We'll say, the rocks cannot compromise more. Base Avaska literally means 1/45 of the entire core. We'll say, you know, what the Gemara is saying is the following. This is a very important idea. Up until now, what we've been speaking about is how high or how low rocks can be to be included or excluded from the sale. Now what the Gemara is giving is a cap on the maximum amount of rock you can have in a field of a base core that you're selling. So Rav Yitzchak is saying is there can't be more than 1/45 of the field of rock. So let's say approximately 2%, right? You can't have more than 2% of the property be rock. So the Gemara goes right down. And again, this is rock that's less than 10 tefachim high. I'm going to have Okva Bar Chama, V'hu Shumuv Loin, Bechameshes Kabin. Furthermore, Rav Okra Chama says, we'll say, this also has to be that it is spread out in at least 5 kav. In other words, that it's somewhat dispersed. Because if it's too concentrated, as we'll see, that's problematic because you can't plow that area. So it's got to be dispersed, at least, I mean literally absorbed, over an area of 5 kav. Rav Chiva Abba Amar Rav Yochanan, V'hu Shemuv Loin, Beruba Shal Sada. So Rav Chiva Abba said, no, it has to really be dispersed or absorbed over the majority of the field. In other words, the rock itself has to be dispersed enough that it's not concentrated in any one area, which would render that one area unfit for agricultural use. But okay, so what's another one is going to ask some questions about certain rock formations. In other words, to certain types of rock formations, go ahead and essentially not invalidate the sale, but essentially preclude your proper use of the field enough to warrant some type of remeasuring. So by Rav Chiya bar Abba, Ruban b'mi'uta, u'me'utan b'ruba. We'll say what happens if you have the majority of the 4 kav. Let's assume for a moment that 4 kav is your maximum amount of stone that you could go ahead and have in any one field. What happens if the majority of the 4 kav of stone are concentrated in a miut, in a small part of the field? Umeutan, in a small part of the 4 kav, is spread out over the rest. So is that okay? Which the Gemara says, teku. But Rabbi Yirmiyah, so we'll say Rabbi Yirmiyah asks another kasha. Turn the page, I'm a base. Kishir mahu. So we'll say, again, now we get into another interesting discussion. Kishir mahu, we'll say, what happens? Kishir literally means like a bracelet. But this is something as the following. What happens if I'm still within the shear of rock. Let's assume for a moment that our shear is 4 kav, right? You can't have more than 4 kav. You can't have more than 4 kav of rock in a field. So let's say I have 4 kav, but the way it's arranged is essentially like a circle around the field. So essentially what happens when you have that? So if you take a look at the Rashbam, he says over here, "B'kishir mahu, im hayu muvlain baruba shel sada, v'lo b'ribua." If it was literally again a circle around the field, kin chatsuva the hasam vade efshar mizdara ben saihu shesivarev ukeshiagia itzla hasela yig yagbia macharisha maat atshiyavor hasela viyachzor viyachrish elisha asuyin keetzada delo mizdara ben saihu shapir kolkach chazeh. So we'll say. So if you look, the Rashbam has a picture there. As you see the Rashbam's picture, the Rashbam's as well, so if you notice, is very specific. which is the stone is there and the stone is around. Now, if you notice again, the circle is not a full circle. In other words, the circle has openings in each of those slots. So the idea would be you would plow in the middle. You'd be able to plow in the breaks in the circle. And then, of course, if there's space, you'd be able to plow outside of the circle. The issue is, we'll say, this is a case of where you have the stone impacting the field. In other words, see, here I have a case where I'm within the permitted amount of stone. In other words, I'm still within the four kav of stone, but the stone is arranged in a way that really impacts the general use of the field. So what's the halacha? Kishura mahu. We'll say, what's kishura? So kishura means what happens if the stone is arranged in a line across the field. So again, these are all examples of where I'm still within the shear, so to speak, the legal amount of stone in the field. But it's arranged in a way that really impacts the general use of the field. So what's the impact of that stone on the field? So kishura means it's like a line across. So the Gemara says, it's tadinin mahu. So it's tadinon. So I'll say, again, it's great. Rashman has pictures over here. It's tadinon means like horns. So you see that over here? That's the picture underneath the circle. In the Rashbam. Rashbam says, it's tadinon. The lom is dara shapir kimo shura. Miyu in beruba shal sadin mefuzarin kain karnish shar. It's tadin kaza. The chain kulan achron achron lom is dazeh shapir kurusha. So we'll say again. So here, I could plow around this. In other words, it's clearly not impacting the majority of the field, but it's situated in such a way that it impacts the field. Next case, akalson. We'll say, what's akalson? Now, interestingly enough, normally we translate akalson as a diagonal. In this case over here, if you look at the Rashbam, he's identifying akalson as a zigzag. Right? There's a back and forth, so it literally looks like a W or an M. The idea over here is the stone is going back and forth, zigzagging throughout the field. So we'll say, in any of these cases, what is the halacha? Meaning, in all of these cases, I'm within, we'll call it, the permitted amount. I'm within the four kav. But the way that four kav is arranged is a way that really impacts my field. Suppose I say, the shayla is, does this type of stone count towards the base core or not? To which the Gemara answers, teku. We're not sure. Suppose I say, again, generally in teku, remember, again, in teku, the way you would deal with dinei mamonos is biyamotzi mechaver alav araya. So you know, if Reuven already bought the field and gave me the money, so again he'd have to have the burden of proof to somehow prove that this is not a proper sale. If he didn't yet pay me and discovered this rock formation, he'd have the right to hold on to his money. So the Gemara goes weiter. He says, next, Tana, another interesting case. Im haya sela yichidi. But say, if there was a standalone stone. Now listen to this. What does this mean, sela yichidi? Take a look at the Rashbam. Right by the zigzag diagram. Tana im haya sela yichidi. Amasnis in kaima. Right, so diktani pachos mikan in dadinima. The katani ala. Shem haya sela yichidi chutzmin hasada samach usada. So the case over here is if I'm selling Reuven a field, I'm selling him a base core, and I will say right at the edge of the border of my field is a stone. Is a rock. The rock happens to be right next to the border, but it's actually technically situated right outside of the border of the field. Even if it's a very small rock, the halacha is, it is not counted towards the base core. In other words, Rabosai, what the Gemara is trying to teach me is the following. As much as we say that rocks less than 10 tefachim, ultimately what, are considered to be part of the field, and you could include them in the calculation of the base core, that's only if they're in the field. But the Maisa, even if that rock is next to the field, you cannot begin the calculation of the base core from that rock, since it's technically situated, although next to the border, right outside of it. So I would say, that case is pretty much obvious. At least it should be obvious, because that rock is not in the field. That case is really a setup for the next case. What's the next case? V'imhaya samoch lemeitzar, afilu kol shehu, ein nimdat ima. Right, kol shehu ein nimdat ima. We're supposed to listen to this case. The next case I will say is, what if the rock ultimately, again, is inside the field, but right next to the border. So we'll say, if you could imagine from, I'm selling Reuven a field, field A, and right next to the border of the field is a rock, right on the borderline, right on the border there. We'll say, the rock is less than 10 tefachim. Less than 10 tefachim. So what's the halacha? So what the Gemara now is teaching about, say, is that when measuring the field, I can't begin from the, we'll call it, the front of the rock, which is the area by the border. Rather, again, I begin from the end of the rock. In other words, I don't include the rock in the calculation of the base core. Now, I will say, so what's the novelty being taught here? The novelty being taught here is, when do we include rocks in a base core? I will say, it's less than 10 tefachim high. When they're in the property. But lemaisa, if they're at the beginning of the property line, we will not count from the beginning of that rock. Rather, we'll begin the count from after the rock. So if this is a specific case of where the rock is right up on the property line, so even though, again, it's within the technical border, you begin to count the base core after the rock going forward. Boira papa. Mufsak afar ben sayimau. So let's listen to this. What happens if lemaisa, again, the rock is not right up on the property line, but what? There's some afar, there's some earth that literally divides between the rock and the border. So look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Mufsak afar. He says it's in the wide lines, about say about five lines in. Kol shu bein sayim kigon pachos migimol, bein ha'u selakot on the meitzar, michashvina le'kisamoch le'meitzar olo, v'yan indirimus. Let's listen to this case. What happens, if you could imagine, if there's the border, and then what happens? There's the rock. And there's less than three tefachim of earth in between the rock and the border. And I will say, now, why does he say less than three tefachim? Because remember, again, that'd be lavud. Right now, again, this is not really a lavud shayla, but rather, again, what the Gemara is saying is like this. If there's more than three tefachim of earth, of ground, then lemaisa, everybody will agree that, of course, that rock is included in the count of the base core. Question is, what happens if there's an insignificant amount of land there? So insignificant that on a halachic level, you can make the cogent argument that it's as if it's not there. So do you include the rock or not? So again, what does the Gemara say? Teku. We're not sure. Bai Ravashi. Offer me lamata vitsun melamala. Let's listen to this case. What happens in the following situation? We'll say, let's say you have a rock, ultimately, again, that is right up on the border, right next to the border. But interestingly enough, it's underground. I know that it's there, but it's not on top of the ground, it's under the ground. Right? That's afar milamata vitsun milamata. I'm sorry, this is the wrong case. Afar milamata vitsun milamata means the rock is there, and underneath it is the earth. Or afar milamala vitsun milamata. I'm sorry, I keep saying it wrong. Afar milamata vitsun milamata means the earth is on the bottom, the rock protrudes. Or offer me the mala vitsunma milamata, or the earth is on top and the rock is underground. Rabbi said, do I begin to go ahead and count from the border where the rock is, or only after? Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. By Ravashi, imtim salamar hefsek afar bein saim have a hefsek. Rabbi said, if in the previous case you want to say that the existence of that earth ultimately creates a hefsek, and therefore again the rock is included in the calculation of the field, so therefore avalim yesh hefsek afar milamata. So we'll say again, Gemara is asking, so all of these cases, Rabbi Yosei, are situations where lemaisa, again, the rock is there, close to the proximity of the ground. But again, these are all different variations. If the rock is right up to the border, here's what we come out with. So how does the Gemara end in all of these cases? Teku. So I'm saying, here's the takeaway. I mean, here's what we know at the end of the day. What we know is that halacha lemaisa, if the rock is above ground, less than 10 tefachim, and is on the other side of the border, it's clearly not included in the calculation of the base score. If the rock is on the inside of the border, I mean, in the field that I'm selling Reuven, and it's right ultimately again on the border, it's also clear that what? It's not included in the sale of the field. Where it becomes greater, I will say, are which cases? Are cases where, again, the rock is in the field, but let's say, again, only a little bit in the field. Let's say there's only less than three tefachim of land between the border and the rock. And then we have a whole bunch of different variations of those cases. Rock on top, subterranean rock, less than three tefachim built up, less than three tefachim of ground, all of those different cases, Rabbi Osai, that's when it becomes a bit more complicated, to which the Gemara says, teku. Rabbi Osai, so again, we're not sure, and again, in all of those cases, the halacha ultimately would side with the one who has the money. We would apply, what's the mechavero, Allah harayah. Fine, says the Mishnah. Rabbi Osai, vayter, base kor afani mochalacha. I say to Ruvain, I'm selling you a base kor of land. Mada bechevel. So we'll say mida bechevel. And I tell him, I'm going to measure out the base kor with a rope. With a rope. So that's how they would measure land. I'm going to measure out a base kor of land with a rope. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Piches kol shehu. If I went ahead and sold him any less than a base kor, so yinaken. So ultimately, again, Ruvain is able to take money off the purchase price. Hoser kol shehu. If I added on any land, then yachsi, Reuven has to return it back to me. So we'll say, so what's the chap over here? Chap over here is if I say to Reuven, I'm selling you a base core of land, bechevel, mida bechevel, and I'm measuring it with a rope. What I'm saying to Reuven is, I'm selling you exactly a base core. Exactly a base core. Therefore, what's the halacha? If I sell him less, I have to refund money. If I sell him more, he has to give me back, the property. So halacha l'maisa, the idea is, as soon as I say that I'm selling it with the rope, what I'm ultimately saying is this is an exact sale. However, v'imamar, hein chaser, hein yeser, but if I say I'm selling you a core of land, more or less, then what? Afilu piches ruva l'sa'a. Then I will say, even if I sold him less than a core, even if I sold him less than a quarter kav per sa'ah. So I was about to say, even if there was missing, meaning I didn't sell him a four core, even if up to a quarter kav per sa'ah is missing, oh, hoser ruba l'sa'ah, or for that matter, again, I went ahead and I oversold, I sold him more land, a quarter kav per sa'ah, he heal. Then I was to say, ultimately, again, the sale stands. Yes, I mean, however, again, I will say, if I end up selling him more or less than a quarter kav per sa'ah, then what? Then Yasu Cheshbon. Then Rabbi said we have to go ahead and we have to figure out the monies. So what the Mishnah is telling me is the following. That when I say I'm selling you a kav more or less, what's the takeaway message? What does more or less mean? More or less means more or less. Right? But the idea is even in more or less, there's a halachic cap. So meaning, the way the Mishnah is quantifying it is a quarter kav per sa'ah. So in the case of a quarter kav per sa'ah, again, that's the maximum that we call more or less. Any more or less than that amount ultimately again requires a recheshbening of the transaction. So mahu machzer. So we'll say again, in cases where let's say I sold too much land to Reuven, I oversold, and Reuven has to return some. He has to return land to me. So we'll say, so what does he return to me? To which the Gemara says, machzer mahu machzer lo maos. So we'll say, under normal circumstances, Reuven returns money to me. Not land. We'll see why in just a moment. However, if I say to Reuven, I want back the extra land, then I, the seller, have the right to demand land. So why is the default that if I end up overselling a bit of land to Reuven, why is halachic default that he returns to me the money and not the land? Very simply, the Gemara says, Kedei, Liapos kocho shamokar. I will say because in order to go ahead and literally bolster the favorable position of the seller, we're trying to benefit the seller. What's the issue here? What's the benefit? Shimshir besada base tishakabin ubegina base chatzikav ukdiv Rabbi Akiva base rova machzir lo esakar. So before we explain this, what you are essentially saying is the following: If I sell Reuven land, and I tell him, I'm selling you a base car. Selling a base car, like a base car more or less. And then it turns out, for example, that I sell him more than a base car, more than a quarter kav per sa'ah above and beyond the base car. So what's the halacha? So the halacha is that I get back my land. But then the Mishnah says, when we say get back your land, what we really mean is, you get back what? You get back your monies. Why your monies and not your land? So we'll say very simple. Because to go ahead and tell the seller to give back the quarter kav per sa'ah of land is going to give the seller what? land that he can't really do anything with. Meaning, a piece of land like that is too small to do anything substantive with. So that piece of real estate essentially is meaningless to me. So instead, in order to go ahead and allow the seller to get back something meaningful, we say to the buyer, give back the additional monies. If the seller were to say, I'd rather have the land, then that is the seller's prerogative. Now the Mishnah says, however, again, in cases where the additional amount of land sold is significant, then those would be cases where bepashtos, the seller would and could demand the land back. Shimshir besada. So for example, again, if I oversold in the land, based tishakabin, an area of 9 kav, ubikinor in a garden, based chatzikav, ukdirevikiva based rova. According to Rabbi Akiva, a quarter of a kav of land, machzir lo esakarka. Ultimately, again, I will say that in those cases where the amount of land is significant, so the seller could demand of the buyer not to return money, but ultimately to return land. And I will say, finally, the Mishnah ends off by saying, v'lo esarova bilbat. And I will say, this goes back to something we learned before. This goes back to the idea, if you remember again, that when we were learning about, for example, Ona'a, so the halacha was that once you're obligated to go ahead and return the additional amount, right, let's say the over sixth amount, you're obligated to return all amounts. And we had this machlokes, that are you obligated just to return the basic amount you need to get to? This is in general. For the illegal overage or a general amount. So now the Mishnah says over here that lemaisa, at the end of the day, let's say I sold Reuven a core of land. And what happens? It turns out that I oversold it by more than a quarter kav per saw. So what I say, the halacha is, not only does Reuven go ahead and give me back the quarter kav per saw, but what does he give me back? He gives me back the total overage over the saw. So meaning, I could have gone ahead and sold him a quarter kav per saw plus a little. Because again, remember, I'm selling him a core more or less. Once we're cheshbening out what he has to return to me, then he has to return to me anything and everything that is over a core of land, which I'm about to say ultimately, again, is in accordance with what's going on. In other words, even in transactions where there's a little bit of a more or less connotation to them, once there's too much of an overage and we have to re-cheshben the transaction, we essentially make the transaction exact. So once it turns out that I've oversold land and I gave him more than a quarter of a kav per sa'ah for the core, not only does he give me back the quarter kav per sa'ah of overage, but he gives me back the full amount of overage, so that ultimately, again, the transaction is for a sa'ah itself. So we'll stop over here for today. I'll share with you a short idea on the parasha.